This week's episode of Radio Labyrinth is produced by Wendy Muller and Matt Talley.
Two Faces Radio.
One of the programs which you hear daily on many of these mutual stations begins like this.
A little nonsense now and then is relished by the wisest men.
Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three.
Little surprises around every corner, but nothing dangerous.
Strike that. Reverse it.
We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of dreams.
This is going to be such an exciting day. I hope you enjoy it.
Round the world and home again. That's the sailor's way.
You stole fizzy lifting drinks. You bumped into the ceiling, which now has to be washed and sterilized, so you get nothing. You lose.
If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it.
Good day, sir.
Are we awake?
We are not sure. Are we black?
Yes, we are.
Then we're awake, but we're very puzzled.
Since you are my guest and I am your host, what are your pleasures? What do you like to do?
Oh, I don't know. Play chess. Screw.
Well, let's play chess.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode 117 of Radio Labyrinth. My name is Tim Andrews. There's Jeff Leboff.
Howdy.
Autumn, Stephanie, and Ira are off tonight. But we are joined by two guests, two guys who have put together a podcast that both Jeff and I are looking forward to called The Wilder Ride Podcast. It is about, well, Gene Wilder. It's not about animal life. And the hosts are with us. We have Alan Sanders and Walt Murray.
Hey, all right.
Hey, welcome. Thank you.
Thanks for the invite. We appreciate you having us.
Yeah, I saw on Facebook, I guess it must have been about a month and a half ago, that you were doing it, or a Twitter or something. And I know that Jeff is a huge fan of, and always has been a big fan of, Gene Wilder as long as I've known him. And I've known Jeff since when? 1978?
Yeah, somewhere around there.
Yeah, 19. That's a long time ago, right?
That is a long time.
40 years ago.
But a man of good taste.
Yeah, the first movie I ever saw in the theater was Blazing Saddles.
Wow. Fantastic. Really? First Gene Wilder movie I ever saw, although it was on network television, was Blazing Saddles. And I was amazed. We talk about it in our pre-episode.
Right.
That you couldn't have the fart noises around the campfire. That was edited out for television.
Yeah, I remember.
But the N-word in Detroit, no problem watching that growing up on network television.
They left that in?
Oh, yeah, the whole movie.
Are you kidding?
No.
Now, if they showed it on regular TV now, they'd cut it out.
They would. I would imagine the kind of climate we live in today.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The first time I saw it on TV here in Atlanta, they left it in.
Jesus.
But they took the farts out.
We watched Blazing Saddles so much as a kid, recorded on our VCR.
Uh-huh.
That I got so used to all the scenes that they added into the movie to make it a little bit longer that I was bummed when I bought it on DVD and so many of the Mongo scenes were cut out of the movie.
Mongo. Who was that? That was Alex Karras.
Alex Karras, yeah.
Wow. Wasn't he on
Webster.
Webster,
yeah.
Webster's from Georgia.
Yep.
Yeah. Yes, he is.
See, this is a labyrinth. We just go around
and around. We just go around and around and we never go anywhere.
Yeah, what was I going to say? In the 70s, they said that the N-word on TV a lot, especially on Norman Lear-produced TV shows, primarily Sanford and Son.
I was going to say, one of my favorite shows in the 70s was Sanford and Son, and he used it all the time.
Uh-huh. And he'd say horrible things to Esther, like, I'm going to use your face and make gorilla cookies and stuff like that. It was horrible.
The two of them had to be the best. Not couple, but couple on TV at that time.
Oh, yeah.
They had the best fights. They had the best just ripping into each other.
And that's because they knew each other so well from the Chitlin' circuit and doing the dirty comedy down here in the South. And before we get back to the podcast.
That's fine.
If you're ever bored and you want to listen to some old funny comedy, just go to YouTube and type in Red Fox Stand Up. Or
her. She
yeah,
had her
what's
own.
Her name? Yeah. LaWanda Page.
LaWanda Page.
LaWanda Page.
Yeah, right.
She's funny as shit. Yep. She tells these long jokes about being in church and the whores in church, but then the punchlines are gold. But anyway, back to the podcast. The podcast is called The Wilder Ride, and you can find it right now on all of your basic podcatchers, right? iTunes, Google Play.
Stitcher.
Stitcher.
Anywhere you listen to
We're even on TuneIn Radio.
TuneIn Radio. Are you on iHeart?
Well, eventually, apparently there's this thing where you've got to have had a podcast out for at least 2 months before you can apply to iHeart. So no problem. We'll get it there as soon as we've been out for a full 2 months. We've got the single episode out right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're working on making sure we have a buffer of episodes, but we've got our pre-episode, a zero, sort of a tease of what's coming. But yeah, they're going to drop officially starting March 26th.
March 26th.
At that point, it'll be every weekday, Monday through Friday, you'll get a brand new episode, 1 minute at a time, looking at one of the films of Gene Wilder.
So they're 1 minute, they're going to be 1 minute long?
How long is an episode?
The episodes will be 20 to 30 minutes,
okay.
But we look at 1 minute of a particular movie.
I get it. All right,
analyze that 1 minute, whether it's an introduction of characters, whether it's talking about where the set design might have come from, or maybe we just spin off down a little rabbit trail and talk about, you know, the first time we ever saw the movie and, you know, the first time you had a pizza party overnight, had friends over mm-hmm. before you started rolling dice and playing Dungeons and Dragons. Hey, let's watch Blazing Saddles or let's watch this. And so there's a whole community of people. It's called the Movies by Minutes. You can go to that website and they've got probably over 100 now films that people, podcasters, are breaking down their favorite either film or franchise 1 minute at a time.
Well, we were talking before we started the show, I believe, and what were we saying? That the movies that most people our age will know from Gene Wilder, and I think, Walt, you brought it up, are Blazing Saddles, Willy Wonka.
Silver Streak.
And Silver Streak. Stir Crazy.
That Young era. Frankenstein.
Young Frankenstein. But those movies... Our parents went to see those movies in theaters, and I guess would take Jeff and take us if we were you know, old enough or whatever. But because of television and syndication, HBO and the VCR, they became our movies, and now they're gone. I mean, for us, they're still there, but I don't think any new generation could watch these films and appreciate them the way that we did, unless they're, you know, film students or...
That was a concern, actually, for us when we wanted to start the project, and it came to me the idea of if we were going to do this kind of a project, because a lot of the franchises have already been sort of sucked up, the Star Wars, the Indiana Jones, and so forth. And I remember I actually had a dream, because I had gotten involved with one of these podcasts called The Thing Minute. We were looking at John Carpenter's The Thing.
Mm-hmm.
Fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, practical effects horror movie, and it kind of like planted a seed, and I thought about it for a little while, and I remember having a dream last fall, and I woke up thinking Gene Wilder, and I'm like, wow, that'd be a Wilder ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I have a name, but I said, you know, it's the holidays coming, too much going on, I didn't even think about it. And then at the first of the year, The Thing Minute wrapped up, and they put out a kind of a compilation final episode, and I had been asked to give 2 or 3 minutes of my thoughts. Is Kurt Russell the thing at the end or not? You know, who's the thing? Are neither one of them the thing? Whatever. So it was kind of fun to do, and as I listened to it, I said, you know, this would be fun to do. And suddenly I was back to the Wilder ride. But I talked to Walt, and I said, will people care about the body of work of Gene Wilder? Is there a big enough audience out there that will care about his work?
And what do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I think so, definitely. As far as people our age,
yeah,
everyone that is our age, I think, was a fan of his. I don't think anybody doesn't like him. And there's still people coming into it now from Willy Wonka, because they show that every year around the holidays or whatever. And
right,
kids are still getting into Willy Wonka.
Yeah, and a young kid can get into a movie like that without having to worry about the you show a 15-year-old that movie. This is stupid. And you think of the sets are cheap and compared to movies today. But kids, young kids will.
Yeah, young kids.
So Jeff brought in a couple of books there. Now, what are those books, Jeff?
Those are Gene Wilder's books.
Yes.
That I got signed when he was here in Atlanta. And
you can see you can feel the grin coming through the microphone.
Yeah. 2009, I think it was.
Uh-huh.
And he did a thing at the Marcus Jewish
Was
community.
It the Jewish Film
yeah.
Festival?
Yeah. Oh, it was their book festival.
Oh, the book fest. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he did a little talk and like got interviewed and did a Q&A. And then...
Is that one of those nights where I pussied out and bailed?
Yeah,
and
I think you were supposed to go and you didn't go.
I don't feel like going to meet Gene Wilder. I'll meet him some other
day. I'll meet him some other day. He's gone now.
Yep. Well, speaking of, Gilbert Gottfried was in town for the Jewish Film Festival over the summer. I didn't even know it, and I would have gone.
Yep.
Anyway.
Yeah, he'd be one to meet.
Apropos to nothing. His podcast is good, but anyway. Yeah. So you've been into him pretty much your whole life.
Yeah, like I said, the Blazing Saddles. I remember. I think it was the Wellsboro movie theater. My parents took me. I don't know what year it was. Yeah, I remember the theater was packed, and I remember just being like not knowing at all what was going on. But the fart scene.
Yeah,
like,
that's what made you laugh.
Everybody was laughing hysterically, and you couldn't even hear like the next 5 minutes of. It took me like.
74.
It took me until like I saw Blazing Saddles on HBO or something before I knew what the dialogue was. Or more beans, Mr. Taggart?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd say you guys had enough. Here's the crazy thing about, because you know, one of the things we're finding about doing our recordings and getting guests to talk about our film, which we haven't mentioned yet, which one we're going to do first. We can leave that for a tease. But Mel Brooks, although was sort of the, he was the rising talent to watch, but he wasn't on the level of like what we would have thought of as like a Spielberg or a Lucas when we were growing up because he hadn't had the hit yet.
Right.
I mean, The Producers was critically well received, but it barely broke even at the box office.
Right.
You know, he didn't have a big hit. He had already finished filming Blazing Saddles, but it hadn't come out yet when they were working on filming this. So this movie came out in the same year as Blazing Saddles. Blazing Saddles earlier in the year, I think around February of 74. This came out in, I think, was it December of 74?
Yeah. What did? Yeah, Young Frankenstein?
Young Frankenstein, yeah. The second movie that which I guess we gave it away. But, So at that point, those were two of the biggest blockbusters of the year. And at that point, Mel Brooks was the hot property. Everybody wanted. Yeah, that was it.
I doubt there have been many producers who've been able to do that since, have two big slam dunks in one year.
It's tough to do.
Oh, hell yeah. So, Alan, how did you get into the podcasting and the broadcast? I mean, give us a little bit of your background.
Okay, so for me, the podcasting came after being invited to be involved in the Thing Minute. Mm-hmm. And that's where I kind of discovered that, well, hey, there's a subculture within the podcasting community of looking at movies. And I've always been, I've been involved in movies, theater, acting. I've got a production company where we film things, whether you need a commercial filmed or whether you want to do something, whatever. And so I've got a film theater background, always have. Love movies, love talking about movies. And so I started to download some of these other podcasts, and I started to really like this idea of, especially if you had a good group of people that could gel, telling stories and reminiscing. And I found myself, as opposed to radio, when you're on radio, it's live, and you can call in.
Right.
I found myself listening to these podcasts saying, I want to call in and tell them what I think. And I realized, well, this was recorded 2 years ago, or a year and a half ago. And I felt myself, that was like, that's how I knew how engaging it was. That here it is, you know, a year and a half after these guys have created an episode, I'm just stumbling across it, and it's so engaging, I want to talk to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what's cool about this community is if you do reach out and you're not some psycho stalker, a lot of them will respond to you. They'll especially if you've got a question or you're saying, hey, you know, why did you come up with that theory? Or I loved the way you kind of analyzed this scene in Raiders or this scene in Aliens or whatever. And it's a pretty cool community.
How about you, Walt?
I kind of came a weird direction, like I do everything else. I'm a private investigator in real life, and I fill in every once in a while on another show at Allen Station in Cartersville. I'd had a walk-on in a Star Trek movie a few years ago.
Which one?
Into
Darkness.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's the bag man. He's got the merce at the end.
Yeah.
And I get run over by the spaceship.
Do you do a lot of extra work?
No, I actually entered a contest and won.
Oh, okay.
They flew me to California, and so I did all that. So I
That's
had
cool.
no idea what I was doing, and came back.
Yeah, I've been struggling 20 years. He gets wins a contest, meets J.J. Abrams, goes out, and is like, you want to go to lunch? Sure.
That's how you do it.
Right.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, you know, I filled in from time to time, and Alan and I have gotten to be friends, and I guess he was looking for somebody who he could kind of boss around.
Well, and the thing is, when you know this, you got to have kind of a right mix of personalities,
mm-hmm.
and because you want the audience to be engaged, you want them to feel like you know they're eavesdropping, almost like they're in the room with you, and
right.
you got to have kind of that right tenor. And I thought Walt and I, we've had to sub for this other show a couple of times, and we've gotten to become very good friends. And I thought, you know, Walt and I, this would be a cool project for us to do on the side, where we can just kind of get together, line up our guests, and just you know talk about Gene Wilder and his movies. And so it just sort of spawned from there.
Well, and for both of us, the humor of Gene Wilder has always been something that both of us have enjoyed. And I know we talk about movies all the time, and I know these movies have come up as we've talked. So it was a good fit. And the guests that we've had so far, you know the scene at the beginning of Young Frankenstein where they're in the medical class?
Yeah.
We brought a doctor in to sit in with us and discuss that scene.
Oh, wow.
you know, hey, is this what med school is like? And frighteningly, he said, it is what med school is like. Yeah. Up to a point.
Yeah. Up until they bring Mr. Hilltop in and do the little experiment on him. And he's like, well, that doesn't really happen that way. But yeah. Up until that point.
Yeah, up until they kick Hilltop in the nuts.
So we try to match guests that make sense for the minutes that we're watching, either fans that requested a particular minute or two or three, whatever they want to talk about.
That's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah, it's been fun.
And we've run the gamut so far early. We're still in the middle of recording. Obviously, these go on. There'll be 106 total episodes because 1 minute. That's a 106-minute movie. But we actually early on decided to bring in a millennial, almost a premillennial, like 24, 25 years old, who had never seen the movie.
All right.
And we said, okay, well, you're funny. We've had him on the air before. He's just one of those witty kind of satirical people.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, you know what? Go watch the movie. If you like it, we'll see what we can do to bring you on. Loved it. And that worked for us because I said, well, maybe there is a younger audience that if we can get them sort of turned on, if they stumble across, maybe they'll enjoy Young Frankenstein.
Oh, that's weird. Usually they hate black and white stuff, even though.
Oh, well, that's exactly what he
I did.
Said at first.
When I was younger, I couldn't get into black and white movies except for Abbott and Costello and
Three Stooges.
Yeah. I mean, that was every Sunday on WPIX in New York. Out of New York, we got it in Pennsylvania, but you know, I would watch those and then King Kong movies all day long, yeah. And that's what I got into the most.
Well, we're all in the same age range, so we all grew up with like five, maybe six channels that you could pick up on television.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Three or four VHF and maybe two or three UHF, and my dad was the cool guy. He had the rotor antenna that we could inside hit the little box and change the direction.
Oh, yeah, my dad had that too, yeah.
Well, we thought we struck gold when we moved here, and TBS was just headed that direction towards being TBS. And so you had all kinds of stuff, Three Stooges and all those great
on the
shows.
Fives.
Yes. That's right.
Yep.
That's right.
What was it? After school every day, as we got older, it was Andy Griffith Show, Beverly Hillbillies, Green Acres.
All the stuff I know I grew up with in Detroit watching before I moved down here. So I watched all those.
What was the superstation in Detroit? Every city had to have one, or did you get
Chicago one? Right?
Yeah, WGN.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the call letters. The UHF channel that showed all of the reruns and stuff was Channel 50, and I can't remember what the. I remember Channel 50.
Yeah,
you know, I'd come home from school, watch Ultraman, and watch Felix the Cat and Mighty Mouse and all that stuff, and then later in the day we'd watch all the live action shows that were reruns. But
Batman.
Batman.
66 Batman.
Yeah.
The good Batman.
I didn't realize what a huge hit that was and how many episodes they shot over just 2 years, and then they canceled it because they didn't have money.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, and the channel in Columbus, Ohio, where I grew up as a kid, we had that and Star Trek back-to-back every day as soon as we got home from school.
Oh, man.
So that was awesome. And, 6 feet of snow outside, but you could watch something good on TV.
Exactly.
And when we moved here, Star Trek, and then TBS started racking up all those other good shows, Gilligan's Island and all the other great stuff.
Gilligan's Island. I'll watch Gilligan's Island, but you have to go down the dial now. Do they have those channels where they show classic game shows?
Like in the 240. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you've got like the MeTVs or what is it?
Yeah, MeTV.
Stuff like that where they do the nostalgic programming. We got a buddy. Well, the buddy that has his own radio show, BK on the Air, that's kind of like the genesis of what kind of drives his show.
I follow him on Twitter, but I never met him.
Yeah, he loves diving down and looking back. What was this date 35 years ago? What were the big hits? What were the songs? And what were the movies? And it's kind of fun to sit in, and part of it is fun. And then the other part is you realize, wait a minute, 35 years ago that movie came out? And
it used to be 30 years ago was in the past. Now 30 years ago is, wasn't that last week?
It wasn't that long ago, right?
Yeah.
Jurassic Park, 25 years ago. I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah. What was the big thing this week, 30 years ago? So it's 1988 was 30 years ago. So Roger Rabbit?
I don't know which one. It could be.
That's crazy.
Adventures in Babysitting.
Leah Thompson.
Well, every once in a while you'll see on Facebook one of those things of 35 years ago this happened. You're like, you have to be kidding me. Mm-hmm. 35 years ago? How am I that old?
Yeah, I know. Because now that we're old, you know, time just goes by.
I will correct now that we're older.
Yeah.
We are not old.
Now that we're older.
Yeah.
We are wise.
Well, my kids keep reminding me that I hit the old milestone.
Oh, yeah. You just hit the big 5-0.
I just turned 50.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, it's kind of almost a relief.
Like, are you the oldest guy in the room?
I made it. Yeah, I'm sure I am.
Jeff, are you 49 this year?
I'll be 49 this year in September.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'll be 48. I'm a young kid.
Yeah, I won't hit 48 till the end of this year. Tim and I are probably neck and neck on that one, depending on his birthday is.
Now, Alan, you host your own talk show. And you fill in at WSB from time to time. How do you, you know, go from being a host of a talk show where everything is down to the time?
Mm-hmm.
And how do you go from doing that to doing the podcast? Or do you apply some of those technical aspects to doing your podcast? Because on this, I don't do that at all.
The nice thing about the podcast is when the show's done, it's done.
Right.
If I go back and I've got the raw audio and it's 35 minutes of raw audio or 40 minutes or whatever, and I'm listening and I realize, okay, this part really dragged and we didn't say a whole lot, I'll just clip it. I'll produce the episode. So to me, I like the element of producing the episode versus just live radio, which is so regimented. But if you hit a crash in turn three, everyone's listening. There's no way you go back and fix it.
Right.
That's what it is.
Right.
So the podcast element allows me to that creativity of almost an editor of saying, how do I make now this raw episode fire on all cylinders? Mm-hmm. Where can I take out the pause? Where can I take out the stutter? Where can I take out the, let me quickly look something up on IMDb and you hear, keyboard strokes. You don't need to hear that in the final product. So I enjoy the fact that I have a sense of when the episode's done, when we've talked about everything in that minute and there's no point in just talking in circles. We've finished everything we need to talk about and there's another minute coming tomorrow. So, let's just go ahead and start the next episode. So there's no reason to just belabor, 3 hours on 1 minute. That'd be boring.
How about you, Walt?
Well, it's an interesting thing for me because when we started the podcast, I had already been thinking about different podcasts I wanted to get involved in. Alan brought this one to me, and I thought, man, this is right in my wheelhouse. I've been on his show to talk politics and some other things. I've been on the BK show talking things. But having that crunched in time where you've got 32 seconds to talk about whatever topic it is versus being able to sit down like we're doing now and saying we've got 35 minutes to talk about what Gene Wilder did in this 1 minute, there's a real sense of freedom in it because we can really have a discussion about something instead of just machine gunning a topic and then moving on and maybe taking a call in the middle of it or have something else happen that we need to discuss. So I really like the podcast format a whole lot better and being able to really dive into a topic and cover it instead of...
It doesn't hurt to be on the radio to be able to promote it either.
No, that doesn't hurt.
That does not hurt.
Hey, everybody, it's Tim here from Radio Labyrinth, the podcast that you're currently listening to. And this is the part of the show where we do a big shout-out and a thank you to all of our Radio Labyrinth patrons. I want to say thank you to our two newest patrons. That would be Brooke Sizemore and Andrew Harbin. So thank you guys both very much for coming on board. And let's do the roll call. AJ Dysart, Matt Talley, Mark Weiland, Chris Knight, Aaron Roberts, JB, Wayne Blair, Nick Frank, Wendy Muller, Buck Monterey, Trent, Jeremy Truman, Dallas Walker, Herb Lamb, Rusty Weinberg, Kevin Stokes, Keith Tate, Chad Shepard, Chris Weiland, Ryan Humans, Darren Downey, Carol O'Dan. No, wait a minute. I messed that up. Sorry, Dan. Dan Carroll. Denise Reynolds. Brian Jackson. Dustin Lawler, who isn't last this week, and he's certainly not least. Zach Pittman. Beth Van Elswick. Jose Perales. Lou Caniglio. Mike Hall. David C. Funk. Matt Carter. Jonathan Wilson. Eric Malmstrom. Colin Oman. And Amber Gilpatrick.
One of the things you were talking about that, Walt and Tim, I don't know if you feel the same way with your show. I want to create the sense that people are almost sort of part of listening in, almost as if they had stumbled upon two or three people just talking about this movie.
That's exactly how ours is, right, Joe?
Yeah.
We have conversations, and again, we're like regular people sitting around bullshitting. The conversation isn't, well, we need to stay focused.
Right.
And people will point it out to me if I get all radio-y and try to bring the topic back. I'll get comments from people, the guy was talking and you interrupted him and went back onto the main thing, And I'm like, well, that's just in my brain. It's ingrained in me and it's difficult to release that sometimes.
Now, I will say there is an element of that that we do need to have because the focus really in this format is the movies by minute.
Right.
It's 1 minute at a time. So at some point, and I usually kind of take that rein and say, I feel like we've dived down enough rabbit trails. Let's get back to discussing what's happening in, you know, the minute now 30 seconds in or 40 seconds or whatever. Sometimes we circle around. We may dive to the end of the minute and then come back. And sometimes we may talk about a character when they're first introduced and then go into their history. But at some point, you still need somebody to kind of still keep you on track because there is a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Get through the movie 1 minute at a time. So you can't not discuss the minute.
Right.
You know, so there is some of that. And I think some of the radio experience does help me with that. I get a sense of when we've talked again off topic enough to kind of bring it back. And then the editing is the final say.
I'm the rabbit trail.
You are?
Well, I think all of us will take a left turn.
Yeah, we do.
That left turn at Albuquerque. You know?
Jeff and I did a radio show. God, when was it? 89?
In college?
Yeah, we did. We did TV trivia. And,
oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and that was pretty fun. But the reason we did that is because when we were in high school, which is in the same town, we listened to this guy named Bob Bogard who did TV trivia every Saturday night. And we would always win, or Jeff would, because he knew everything. And the guy would do
savant.
The guy would do the MASH special, and Jeff would win all the time. Yeah. And that's how I ended up getting like seven. The prize was always a pitcher and a pizza from Pudgy's Pizza. And I think we ended up having, what, seven or eight of those?
That's ironic. My wife's irked with me tonight because this is our team trivia night, and I'm like, you know what? I can skip one day of team trivia, but I'm like the movie guy, the Shakespeare guy, the literature guy, the current event guy, the news guy. So they sports pops up, and I'm like, I like watching sports, but
I don't know sports.
You pull me a stat that says name the NCAA school that had the most consecutive appearances. I'm like, I'm done. I kind of you lost me at NCAA. You know?
Where do you play your team trivia?
Up in Cartersville, a place called Six's Tavern. Can I give him a free plug?
Sure. Okay. We don't have Plugola in the podcast. Say whatever you want.
Yeah, every Wednesday, we're Fritz's Minions.
Jeff, you got any questions?
How far into
are you trying to get us back on track?
Yep.
How far into the movie have you guys got so far?
We just completed the first half hour. We've got 30 episodes in, so the first 30 minutes down. Our goal was to have 40 minutes complete when it goes live, to have a buffer.
Is there a minute where, like, 30 seconds of it is like a slow transition shot into something, and like, then nothing happens for 15 seconds?
And we've actually talked about this because we had an actor, Adam Boyer, on a few minutes ago. Just a few minutes back. And he was on The Walking Dead. He's the Batman from Terminus who beat some guys' heads in.
Right.
So Adam was in, and we were talking about the differences between 1974 making movies and today. And one of the comments he made is, now it is just move, move, move.
Right.
You got to have action every second. But there are a lot of scenes in this movie where they're walking up steps, or you have a slow pass on the
camera pushes
coffin.
In, or just a tracking shot. In fact, the staircase one, when they first get inside the castle and Frau Blücher is taking him up the staircase.
Yes.
I mean, it's a 15 seconds of silence before she spins around and says, "Stay close to the candles."
Yeah.
But the thing is, there's a great joke there. The candles aren't lit.
Right. Yeah.
So we can talk about the setup, the joke. We talked about how in the master shot, the candles were accidentally lit. And then when you went for the medium shot, they weren't.
Was that Cloris Leachman?
Cloris Leachman, absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
So I think if you prepare, I don't want to say over-prepare, but if you prepare enough, you know the trivia, you love the movie, you bring in a compelling guest, it doesn't matter if you've got 20 seconds of, quote, dead air or white space where there's nothing being discussed. There's still stuff to talk about.
Right.
Like how hot Terry Garr was.
There may have been a conversation about that.
Yeah. Her being hot or no?
Yeah, I think we both fall in that direction.
Yeah.
We try to be, well, we've both got daughters, so we have to be careful.
I understand.
But yeah, no, she's like we say when he has his nightmare, there are worse people to come wake you up from a nightmare.
Absolutely.
So, but with, we talked about with Terry Garr because being kids of the 80s, really, even though I was growing up, I was born in the 70s, but really all the 80s movies, that's when I could go to the movies alone. I could go out and hang out with my friends alone, go do things
or
on my own.
Or go rent one.
Or rent, go to the before Blockbuster even.
Mm-hmm.
Terry Garr was the mom in so many other movies.
Yeah, Mr. Mom.
You know, including
wasn't she?
Close Encounters, Tootsie. Mm-hmm.
Tootsie. She's fantastic in
and
that.
So
scatterbrained actress.
She's just she's wonderful in this movie. In Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
What we're loving about doing this format is being able to take time to appreciate the nuances of performance, of character, of what they brought.
Right.
And it's just fun. It's fun, but we don't do it in a way that I don't want it to turn it into like an academic thing. Like look, the actress waited 2.2 seconds before she blinked and turned right, and then you can see. No, it's more about just understanding the difference between, let's say, Elizabeth played by Madeline Kahn, who's sort of this money-grubbing, amazing, only cares about herself and her looks. And then you've got Terry Garr, who looks hot, but she has no sense of that. She's very right. innocent, almost childlike. And so we love comparing and contrasting how these characters are all in the movie.
Yeah, it definitely does not feel like a film school class.
No, I would say it's not.
I don't want to be lectured to by my podcast.
Yeah, you're not going to have that.
No, but I think at the end you're going to gain, because we've had people who love the movie who will bring some trivia in or say, hey, by the way, did you know? And they'll be like, I had no idea. And so to me, that I think is kind of cool if we can drop mm-hmm. some of that stuff along the way, but do it organically where it just sort of happens.
Aside from movies, how we got into Terry Garr, I guess, would have been Letterman. Because she was a guest, and she was always one of the best guests on that show, and so you'd have her on.
And it seemed like for a while, like through the 80s, she was in everything.
Mm-hmm. Felt like it.
She was everywhere. And Young Frankenstein was really her first feature film where she was a major player.
And Young Frankenstein, to get back to what you were talking about a second ago, it's the giant screen is a canvas, and you're not just paying attention to the dialogue and the quick jokes. You're paying attention to everything because there might be a joke that you don't know anything about. But like you said, you got to look.
Right. Well, that's the thing we've been talking about, the difference between current comedies, the modern editing right. of just hyper cuts. Some of these jokes may take a whole 2 or 3 minutes before they circle back around. You're like, oh, that's why they said it that way, or that's what that means. And the rewatchability then becomes so much more fun because right. now you know the setup and you're waiting for the payoff. And I really enjoy that. I think a lot of the Gene Wilder movies do that very well. That you know that payoff that not only has the immediate dividend, but they set the things up that circle back around, and you're like, oh, that's just well written.
Well, my favorite line and scene in Blazing Saddles is very subtle, but it's when he first meets Gene Wilder. Wilder wakes up, and he says, "Are we awake?" And Gene Wilder says, "We are awake." Wait, are we black? Yes, we are.
We are awake, but we are very confused.
What do you do here for fun? Play cards? Screw? Or no, let's play chess. See, I don't have it memorized right. yet. I guess it's that old age.
Well, why don't we play chess?
Yes.
That is, I'm looking forward to when we eventually dive into that one. The cool thing about picking this format, a lot of the film Movies by Minutes, if they're a franchise, the kind of the unwritten rule, but everybody kind of follows, is if you're going to do a franchise, you start with film one, go to film two. You don't get to jump to your favorite.
Right.
And if you start a series, they really want you to finish. So, yeah, you've got to battle through. If you're doing Indiana Jones, at some point you have to acknowledge there was a fourth movie. You know, none of us want to acknowledge that, but if you decide to do it, you
is
have
that
to do
the fridge one?
Yes.
Yep. Yes.
So
we saw that
with us.
We?
I said, "Can we?" And I asked the guys that kind of run the group. I said, "Can we come at it from a different perspective? Instead of saying a franchise, can we look at the body of work of an actor?"
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, "Oh, that's kind of cool." So that allows us the latitude to kind of jump around, but we're still.
So you'll be under the umbrella of their network.
Well, in the sense that we're part of, if you go to moviesbyminutes.com,
yeah.
you can see we're one of the things listed that said, you know, here's yet another one of our podcasts that we're sort of helping to promote and whatever.
Nice.
Kind of a community.
So, it's more of a community. Yeah.
Jeff.
And I haven't heard the Star Wars ones, but you guys said you're a fan of that. Did they do all of them, even the prequels and everything on there?
Yes. They're still working through them, actually.
Right. Yeah, they still
the
are.
Star Wars Minute guys are really the ones who took that concept to the podcast first. They really took this whole idea from, I think it was on television, it was two guys that did Gutterballs TV or something.
Something like that.
They did a thing on cable, where they analyzed a movie, and they were kind of sort of pseudo doing it a minute at a time. And then these guys go, hey, what if we did that as a podcast and we did Star Wars? And they kind of started to break it down, and all of a sudden, you know,
right.
just like anything else.
It sounded kind of like that thing you put that on it when we went to your apartment one time. It was like on YouTube. Where they broke down the movie and
that
made fun
was,
of it.
That's
but they did it like in real time,
right?
Along with the movie.
MST3K?
No, it's Red Letter Media, and and that's the name of the podcast. And they do a bunch of different shows on YouTube. But the one that they did for the Star Wars movies was Mr. Plinkett. Yeah. Are you familiar?
Yes.
And
it's awesome.
They do almost a scene by scene review of the first three prequels, and then he does Rogue One. And
then moves into
the
New Hope.
Force Awakens.
Oh no! So he didn't do the classics.
No, he didn't do the classics.
Okay,
but he's this guy, and he talks like this, and he says, "Phantom Menace." Wait, what was the second? Attack of the Clones was the biggest disappointment since my son. But behind the comedy, and there's a lot of good comedy in those reviews, but there are very informed opinions about how the film was just a disaster from direction to writing to acting. Certainly, I wanted to say Hayden Panettiere, but that's not his name.
No, Hayden Christensen.
Yes, he was awful.
Yeah.
Awful. And he's not a terrible actor to begin with.
So. No, you realize how bad it is when they made Liam Neeson look bad.
Yeah.
You know, right. And you've got an Academy Award winner who can look good even in the, what were the anti, the vigilante ones he did with the Left
Taken.
Behind? Not Left Behind. Taken, yeah.
Yeah.
When you can, even Taken 3, it's worth watching for him. It's,
right.
It's a terrible movie, but like, well, hey, it's at least, even Liam Neeson, I'm watching, I'm like, how did George Lucas screw this up so bad?
Yeah.
So badly.
And, you know, even Mark Hamill, or you ask people from those movies, Mark Hamill wasn't in those three, but you ask people who were affiliated with Star Wars, they hate all of them. You know, Anthony Daniels, I asked him one time. I met him once at, in that C3PO. Yeah, I met him at Dragon Con and got an autograph. And he, you know, he's really nice to me, and he said, how are you doing? And I said, man, I said, great job in the movie. I said, but boy, that Jar Jar Binks was annoying as hell. And he looked at me and he went, I forget. He said something very snide, but he agreed with me.
Right.
And I can't recall.
There's got to be careful to walk that line, though, to be a franchise actor, to not necessarily badmouth it, because it's paying his bills. But
and he's not even a main player in the newer films, but that's fine.
But C-3PO's still there.
Yeah, he's still there, but it's BB arthritis, whatever that soccer
BB-8.
Ball is.
Yeah,
BB-8.
Yeah, BB-8.
So you guys watched Young Frankenstein all the way through, and then
when, no, he's putting us back on task.
When you have your guests in, you watch their minute with them.
Yes,
at the beginning of the episode
to help refresh with each minute that we record. We'll do a joint looking. We'll not necessarily talking it through, but make sure that everybody kind of has it's as fresh as it can be in your mind as we go. And then depending where the guest is, most of the time the guest is remoting in and part of the podcast from a different location rather than all in the same room. So while we're recording, I'll keep the sound down and keep looping it in studio. So Walt and I will at least have the video in front of us in case we've missed something, or make sure that we didn't skip over a detail that might be worth discussing. So while we're going along, the it's always playing in the studio.
That 1 minute.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and then we'll do five episodes in one sitting, basically. So each guest will have a 5 minute block.
Generally speaking, I mean, we broke some up, but yeah, we try to book a guest for a 5 minute block so they're with us for the week.
That's cool, because that's what I'm doing with this episode. Tonight's episode, actually, I'm going to split it into 40 individual 1 minute episodes.
And then somebody's going to do a podcast
reviewing each minute.
I don't like the way they did it, but here we go. The first minute they talked about.
Yeah, you got the guy with the retainer voice.
Yes.
So let's talk about some of these Gene Wilder movies. We're going back. Now, you guys are focusing on his cinematic films, not the TV, which he did a lot of. And he had series. Toward the end, he did TV movies.
And then he was a television guest for a lot of things like Will and Grace and
right,
stuff.
He was
right.
All kinds of stuff.
But we start with Bonnie and Clyde. So this is 1967, Bonnie and Clyde. He had a brief role in that. What did he do in that again?
He was just a guy. He and another woman were basically carjacked, if you will, just basically taken prisoner for a bit. And he charmed him and got him to the point where he realized he was having fun being with Bonnie and Clyde and stole the screen for the time he was on it. And that's where he made a really big impression on some of the Hollywood types, because he was still more of a theater actor and had just gotten this little bit part. It was going right back to theater after this.
Was he a Broadway guy?
No, he was more of a – he went to England for a while. Right out of college, I don't think he was on Broadway. I think he was off Broadway. But the cool thing about how Mel Brooks discovered him is Mel Brooks' girlfriend at the time was, and I knew the name was going to pop right out of my head.
Yeah, I just did the same thing.
Anne Bancroft.
Yeah.
So who ended up being his wife.
Anne Bancroft was in the play with Gene Wilder. And so it was on the stage with Gene Wilder. Mel Brooks at the end said, I want to meet this guy. And talked to him.
That was a good Mel Brooks.
He's like, I got a part for you. And I talked to him about the part in the producers and said, I want you to be Leo in the producers. And that's how we got that part. And they had such a good time working together. Technically, he wasn't going to be in Blazing Saddles. I think the guy that they had gotten for Blazing Saddles to play Sheriff Bart was a drunk.
That's right.
And the scene, because of course the first scene is there, he spills over out of his cot.
Yeah.
Apparently, as he spilled over out of his cot, threw up everywhere because
oh,
he was drunk.
Who was that? What actor?
I could go back and pull. We're not. We didn't study for Blazing Saddles yet.
Because I know that Richard Pryor was supposed to have played.
He was going
to
be Sheriff Bart.
Right, but he was too coked up or whatever. There's
that
great
interview.
Well,
the studio said he was a little too hot a property at that time. I don't know how coked up he was yet.
Well, no, you got to hear the interview. What he's talking about.
Yeah.
That might have been from Stir Crazy, though.
Yeah. Oh, he was blasting with Stir Crazy.
Gene Wilder, he's a faggot.
We're going to talk about this movie.
Yeah, sure. What do you want to know about this movie?
Stir Crazy.
Sucks.
Now, Rick, Gene Wilder said that he
Gene
thinks,
Wilder ain't shit. He's a faggot.
No, come on. You don't mean that.
Gene's yeah, I mean it. But you ain't going to put it on.
Is that why he said he was going to marry you?
Yeah, he can suck my dick. I don't care. I like Gene, though, because he's funny.
Did he,
but he's queer as a $3 bill.
Apparently, Mel Brooks called Gene and said, can you get on set tomorrow?
Wow.
And the very first thing is what he did. He walked in, basically got in hair and makeup, and did that scene.
Wow. Well, professionalism, because the producers was also 67. So we go to 70, Start the Revolution Without Me. I've never seen that. Have you guys?
No. I don't think anybody's ever seen that. Nobody's
yes,
seen
it.
No, I have not 71. Seen that.
How about this one? Quaxer Fortune Has a Cousin in the Bronx.
I have seen that.
You have? So what's that about?
It's about that guy.
Quaxer.
He's this Jewish
guy. He's in the Bronx?
Guy, yeah. And he lives in the Bronx. And
sounds compelling.
I know a funny story about that
it's,
one.
It's
Margot
really
Kidder's
first movie.
Ah, okay.
But they were going to get some actor, some director to direct it, but because Gene was involved in a play at the time in France, they had to pass on one director and had to find a different director. So, again, this was at a point where he wasn't really the film property. He was doing a lot of theater, a lot of stage, anywhere where he could do theater work.
Right.
And that's kind of he grew into that mold of thinking theater was the serious acting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the story goes the reason he got involved in a performance in general is his mom – when he was young, I think 7 or 8, had a heart attack. And the doctor pulled him aside. Now, I don't think this would be considered, you know, the Hippocratic Oath today, but said, don't upset your mother or you could kill her.
Oh, jeez.
And Gene Wilder has said this in his biography. He said, it made such an impact on me that I felt like, well, if I can't upset her, I need to make her laugh. And from that point forward, he felt my goal was to make her laugh. In fact, he was so worried about ever arguing with her up until later in life because he felt like that the doctor's word stuck with him for so long. Don't upset your mother. You'll kill her.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I tried that with my kids. Didn't work.
No. Please, upset your mother. 71, we got Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. So this explains
Mel
the gap.
Stewart.
So. What's that?
Mel Stewart. I can't wait. To me... I love almost everything that Gene Wilder is in, and I have not seen everything, and I probably will love, no matter what, his performance. This is, in my mind, the best role he's ever played. I think Willy Wonka is my favorite role he's played. It's not my favorite movie, but in terms of character, because I think he pulls off what no one else could have, and still, even if you look at the remake, which I don't even want to acknowledge, you can't beat his performance.
Oh, no. It's amazing.
It's his.
It's him. It's 100% him. The sarcastic lines... The witty riposts. It's great. And it was a bomb, wasn't it?
I don't know if it was a bomb.
It was not a bomb.
I think
it
broke even initially,
great.
But it became one of those movies as it hit to network television, everyone watched it. Pretty soon, everyone has seen that movie. I mean, even my kids have seen that movie multiple times, and not just because of me. Going over to other people's houses, it's a kid's movie you can put on still to this day.
Right.
Jeff, like you were saying, you know, maybe if you're 13 or 14, you might think it's hokey, but, you know, 9, 10, 11, although the tunnel scene still freaks a lot of kids
scary.
Out.
Scary.
Freaked me out the first time I saw it as a kid.
I think if you stand the two movies side by side and you put the original with Gene Wilder and the remake, the original is that much better.
Yeah.
Because you realize how bad the second one was, but you also realize how good the first one was and how good Gene Wilder was. And we've talked about this many times in the podcast so far. His facial expressions can carry a scene.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks so much with his facial expressions that... it really captures you as you watch his movies.
Now, that is especially evident in Stir Crazy, where he's just a clueless wanderer in that film, and he discovers that he's good at riding the bull.
Right.
And the warden's like, we need to get him. Now, I forget that actor's name, but he was a character actor from the 70s and 80s and a lot of stuff, and War Games. I'd piss on a spark plug if I thought it would do any good.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that I think is... And
Barry
I think,
Corbin.
Yeah, Barry Corbin.
The reason Gene Wilder became the star after Willy Wonka is his decision, which I think is the most important decision he ever made working on that film, was he told the director, the only way I will do this role, because he read it and he thought, I see me maybe, but I don't know. I'm not going to commit to it unless.
Mm-hmm.
And Mel Stewart said, what do you mean unless? And he said, well, I think the opening scene when we first meet Willy Wonka... I can't come out there jumping. I can't come out there happy. I can't show my cards. I want to come out aged, decrepit, hurt. I want to walk with a cane, and I want to slowly, this cheering audience, I want to bring them to where they're like, oh my God, this is this poor man. He's not what we thought he was. And I want to put my cane, and he said this, he had already written it in his head. I want to put my cane in the cobblestone, and it will stick, and I'll go to take two more steps and realize my cane's not there. And as I start to fall, I'm going to dive into a somersault, pop up, and do a ta-da!
Oh, okay.
And the director said, why do you want to do that? And he said, because from that point forward, in the rest of the script, you never know if I'm pulling your leg.
Right.
Wow.
You don't know if it can be trusted.
That's genius.
And when you think about it from the rest of the film, that's the motif that goes through everything. We don't know, is he for real or is he not? Does he really care about, you know, the kid in the chocolate tunnel or not? Does he
Augustus
care
Gloop.
About Augustus Gloop? You know,
help, police, murder.
Do something. Help, police, murder. Oh, the tension. I hope it lasts.
So you move on to 72. Everything you always wanted to know about sex but were afraid to ask. Who made that movie?
Woody Allen.
Woody Allen, yeah. That's right. All right. So I've seen that. That's where...
He has a sheep fetish.
Yes.
we're men and sheep. We're scared.
That's right.
Burt Reynolds is in that movie. Tony Randall. They're in the brain, and one of them plays a sperm. I forget. I've only seen that once. So that's 72, and then you skip 2 years, and there's a bunch of films. You have Rhinoceros, The Little Prince, and then, of course, the big 74 films, Blazing Saddles and Young Frankenstein. Have anyone here ever seen Rhinoceros or The Little Prince?
No. I've seen The Little Prince, but it's been years.
I just looked Rhinoceros up, and you can watch it online.
Really?
You're going to watch it.
I've got it queued up, right?
I'm 19 minutes in. I pushed play when the show started, and I forgot to push pause.
Oh, yeah?
That's why he's been so
quiet over
here. It
looks pretty good, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's got Zero Mostel in it, who was also in the producers.
Well, you know, jump in whenever, Jeff. You don't have to sit and watch movies.
No, Jeff's like, this is terrible. I didn't realize that it was such a boring show.
Hey, Scruffy, you need a haircut? Got an idea for you. Go to MaryToddHairCo.com. Find yourself an appointment and get yourself a haircut. They also have hot lather shaves and some of the best colorists in the city. Don't believe me? Pick up your iPhone and go, hey, Siri, where can I get the best men's or women's haircut in Atlanta? Guess what? It's going to pop up Mary Todd Hair Co. Also, Mary Todd has a custom line of shampoo, pomades, beard oils, all handmade using the finest ingredients available. Did I say they're produced locally? Well, they are. Check them out at MaryToddHairCo.com/products.
No, I just pulled it up to see if you could find it online anywhere, and I accidentally had pushed play, and it was on a closed, you know, another tab. It was going.
Where did you find it?
19 minutes in.
YouTube? That's awesome.
DailyMotion.com.
Okay. Yeah, you can find a lot of illegal shit on DailyMotion. Yeah. So 75, you got the adventure of Sherlock Holmes' smarter brother.
Which is fantastic.
Right?
You've never seen it. It is great.
Never seen it. Who made this film?
Didn't he? I thought he wrote
Gene Wilder.
Yeah, Gene Wilder. I think he wrote and directed.
Oh, did he direct it?
I got to double check that.
Wrote and directed.
Yeah, I think he wrote and directed it. Another pairing of him and Marty Feldman having come off of Young Frankenstein together.
So Marty Feldman plays Watson or something?
Watson. Yeah, yes. The Watson-ish character.
Oh, okay.
Because it's not Sherlock Holmes.
It's his smarter brother.
It's a smarter brother. And then when they first meet him, they say, are you Sherlock Holmes? And like, sheer... luck. My brother is sheer luck home. Like, he solves everything by sheer luck. I'm the smarter brother.
Okay.
And so that play on the name is fantastic.
I'm sure I've seen it then.
Madeline Kahn's in it.
I probably saw it on HBO or TV.
Yeah, Dom DeLuise. Worth have seen it.
Worth rewatching if you haven't in a long time.
And then we skip ahead to 76, where he first starts working with Richard Pryor on screen, Silver Streak.
Which, Alan and I were talking about this on the way down here. I think Silver Streak is my second favorite Gene Wilder movie.
Now, why is that?
You know, I think it's because of that pairing.
Okay.
And, Richard Pryor is just an incredible actor. He's just hilarious. And that one scene where they're in the train station and, you know, again, we got to kind of give a disclaimer up front, but when he puts Gene Wilder in blackface and has him go through the station— and Gene is like the whitest person ever, and he's trying to get him to get by the police. That is one of the funniest scenes I think of any movie I've ever seen.
If you want to see how good Gene Wilder is as an actor, and you can get these scenes on YouTube, watch that particular scene where he's trying to practice in the bathroom, talking jive, listening to the radio.
That's right, because he put the shoe polish on his face.
That's right. And he's moving in such a horrible white man way.
Right.
But by the end, he gets the voice down, he's out there, and he's got Richard Pryor going, holy crap.
And he has the denim hat on, right?
Denim hat, and he's got that silk jacket.
Yeah.
Purple. Yeah.
I'm bad.
He's got the radio, and he's like, bah, 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 bah.
And it is terrible.
And he changes his voice to where he's got a very, you know, very black dialect. He's like, what's up, my brother?
Come on, man. Get some jive going. Be cool. Shake it, but don't break it. Hey, man. How do I look? You look sharp, mister. I feel sharp. You hear? I feel like it's 10 around midnight.
You did?
Honest, sir. Get down. Get down. Feeling good. Feeling fine. Feeling real fine. Hey, sir, just loosen up those hips, sugar. All you buddies got a tight ass. Yeah, get that ass moving there. Out of sight. I'm a macaroni. Get down. I'm the king. Number one, baby. Ba 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 ba. I don't think we'll make it past the cops.
We'll make it past the cops. I just hope we don't see no Muslims.
I watched that just the other day, and to watch him transform on screen from the least hip, you know, it was so obvious he was in costume, and it became so funny to watch him morph. And he was over-exaggerating. It was obviously a comedy, but it was hysterical to watch it all take place on camera.
What was the plot of that film, Jeff?
They're on that train, and they're going across the country, and there's like
a bomb on it or something?
No, there's like espionage going on the train, and maybe they're going to get thrown off the train or killed or something.
Okay. And he gets in a fight with the guy who played Jaws in the James
Richard
Bond.
Richard Thiel.
Yeah. And it's a funny movie. It's well written, and it's one of those that from the minute it starts till the minute it ends, you're in it. It's just a good movie.
I remember watching it on RCA video disc.
Wow.
That my parents had in their trailer in Caton, New York. They had the RCA disc, and we would go to the store where you would rent those, and they were just, they looked like gigantic floppy discs.
Yeah.
And then they owned some too. They still have, my dad still has the machine. It still has the players.
Does it work?
I don't know. But he's got Rocky III, the original Jaws, DC Cab. They own that.
Oh my gosh, DC Cab.
Yeah, which you would watch just for the boobs and Mr. T.
And the one great line, I don't work on January 17th because that's Elvis's birthday.
Yeah, oh, that was Gary Busey, right?
Gary Busey.
And then they
had... Before he was totally crazy.
Jeremiah Johnson with Robert Redford. Love that movie. And Denver Pyle's in that. Grish! And then the last one is Little Big Man, which ended up being one of my favorite Western movies of all time.
Great movie.
Love that movie.
I remember seeing Slapshot for the first time on Laserdisc.
Not Laser.
Or on
RCA on
disc.
And you had to flip them over?
Yes.
If the movie was long?
I was on a hockey travel team when I was a kid, and our coach brought his disc player and Slapshot. And so we watched. That was not a good idea for a bunch of
Did you get a lot of penalty or referee calls on you next game?
We had a bench-clearing brawl in that game.
Hey, can we do like the triplets and beat up everybody before
the
we even warm
brothers.
Up?
Yeah,
that was while we're warming up?
The only bench-clearing brawl I've ever been involved in, thanks to...
A bunch of eight-year-olds going out there beating each other with sticks.
It was awesome.
The only movie I've ever seen on an official Laserdisc is Star Trek II: The Wrath of Khan.
Because
my uncle had that on his Laserdisc player, and I was, wow, this is so cool. It looks shiny.
I had a Laserdisc player for just a little bit because that was the only way to get movies that were like the director's cuts.
Godfather.
I saw Aliens.
And Aliens, yeah.
On the director's cut, where I'm like, oh, look at these extra scenes. I had to buy a Laserdisc player and buy the Laserdisc. And
it was the first place you could get the, on disc, you could get the correct, it's the director's cut where you start the whole movie.
Oh, Godfather Epic.
Yeah. The what?
The Godfather Epic,
where it starts actually
in
Italy.
It remixes two and one together, putting it in chronological order. That is, if you've never seen The Godfather, rent that.
Well, that's the book.
It's fantastic.
You know, I've read the book, and that's the way the book is, except there's so many things left out of the movie. I mean, this is another podcast in entirety, but you know the scene in The Godfather at the wedding where Sonny's wife is, showing how big his dick is?
Mm-hmm.
That is a primary thing in the book, that his dick is so big, and Lucy is her name. I forget her last name. is the girl that he's having sex with upstairs. But
Lucy.
Yeah. Well, that's really her. And sorry for your, if you have sensitive ears, but the reason he worked so well with her is because her vagina was so big. And this isn't a lie. So part of the book, The Godfather, is her going out to California to try to get reduction surgery on her vagina. And you know, there's a guy that's hanging out with her, and they're doing all this shit out. I mean, all that's not in the film right at all. And she's in Godfather 3 because she's Andy Garcia's mother. Andy Garcia was the bastard kid.
Ah.
But it just these subtle little things. And then,
I never watched 3.
And Jack, don't worry. Jack Waltz, you know, the guy with the horse head in his bed,
yes,
is a child molester who they have the Shirley Temple character, and they show her very briefly in the film leaving. But when Tom Hagen gets to the place, and they're saying he sees her all disheveled and crying and leaving, like Jack Waltz had just, you know, molested her. So the book is just, again, really weird compared to the film. Of course, there's a lot of the same shit in it, but anyway.
And that's probably not a lot of stuff they could have put in a movie in the 1970s.
No, you're absolutely. Well, I don't know. They have what's her name? Brooke Shields is nude in a movie when she's 12.
Yeah, was it the Blue Lagoon?
No, before Blue Lagoon.
Oh, was it before? Okay.
She's a pretty baby. She's being offered up on a platter to a bunch of men.
She lives in a
I don't know
brothel.
That movie.
A brothel, yeah.
I don't know that I would watch that movie now.
No.
Now that I've got daughters.
Probably a good reason not to.
It used to be on HBO all the time.
Really?
Yeah. But again, they're serving her up on a platter and she's nude. And her mother, you know, let her do all these things. She's in Playboy nude in the 70s too because it was a weird time.
No, you could get away with a lot in the 70s. So they probably could have gotten away with with some of that.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about that with Blazing Saddles, getting back to a Mel Brooks and Gene Wilder movie. Could that movie come out today? You know, could you make that movie as that movie was made and release it today? Which is funny because when I asked that, so many people that get so uptight on, you know, Hollywood crowd, you talk about, what's your favorite? Oh, I love Blazing Saddles. They say they can love it, but would they accept it if it came out today?
Probably not. It would depend on who the director was, who says the lines, and, you know, whether it was, you know exactly. The only way it would work is if there were certain, you know, critical people in place to make it acceptable.
Now, what the hell do you think you're doing with that 10 star, boy?
Watch that boy shit, Redneck. You talking to the sheriff of Rock Ridge.
Here we take the good time and trouble to slaughter every last Indian in the West, and for what? So they can appoint a sheriff that's blacker than any Indian. I am depressed.
Excuse me, Mr. Taggart, sir, but I sure do hate to see you like this. What if me and the boys was to shoot that dead? Would that pep you up some?
That might help.
See, I think the reason it won't work and couldn't work is because the modern audience has to be either beat over the head or told over and over and over what we're trying to accomplish with this movie instead of just you figuring it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was 9 years old when I saw it, and I learned all by myself, age 9, we shouldn't treat people that look differently.
Yeah.
I learned that all by myself. I didn't need to be told that.
Right.
And I understood the comedy. I understood the satire. I understood, hey, we're mocking people who act this way. And that's how everybody at the end of the town all ends up working together and having a good time. They realize, oh, this is stupid being prejudiced.
Like the sheriff taking off the Klan hat. Hey, where are the white women at?
Oh, that is fantastic.
That is awesome.
That reveals so much.
It does.
Sociologically.
Oh, boys.
Now we're
look you what I got here.
When we even talk about it with Young Frankenstein, that we're in a time where everybody is so hypersensitive about everything that, you know, you get triggered by just a word being in something, no matter what the context is.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
It makes it.
You think people with humps would be triggered?
Yeah, I know. Uncle Humpy was all.
What's hump?
I have a hunch that might be true.
Well, and
I just learned that he died at, I think he was, 43 or 45? He was a chain smoker.
He was mid-40s, right. But he also had not Crohn's disease, but he had something. That's what caused his, Graves' disease. He had a botched surgery, and that caused his eyes, the Graves' disease caused his eyes to go, was it dysphagia, where they go different directions?
So no wonder he chain smoked.
Now, that brain that you gave me, was it Hans Delbrück's? No. Ah. Good. Would you mind telling me whose brain I did put in? And you won't be angry?
I will not be angry.
Abby someone.
Abby who?
Abby normal.
Are you saying that I put an abnormal brain into a 7.5 foot long, 54 inch wide gorilla?
George Shapiro is on Gilbert Gottfried's Amazing Colossal podcast this week, and he's talking about that Marty Feldman and how he smoked so much that his necklace had a lighter on it. So he would light it as soon as it was out all day long. So he must have gone through four or five packs of cigarettes a day. Yeah. Let's bust through the rest of these real quick. The World's Greatest Lover came out in 77. I've seen that, but it doesn't have a place in my head. We're going to go to 79. So he took a couple years off. The Frisco Kid.
That's one I have not seen. Right, and I am so looking forward to doing that particular film. Not only because Harrison Ford's in it, but I've read so much about it since. And what I love, and this happens with so many movies, reading the reviews of the day and sort of panning the movie as not knowing what it is or where it's going, or sort of a blah performance with a blah story. And now you go back and you go, no, that was a great movie. Right. It's a religious journey of a guy who stays so true to his Jewish roots to try to get this, I think, the Talmud up to a synagogue out in the West.
Oh, wow.
And I read a thing, actually it was in Forward 2 years ago, review a young writer for the Jewish newspaper, The Forward, wrote and said, this is a great journey, and everyone should see this movie to watch how he stays so true to his faith, even going to be sacrificed by Indians, doesn't matter, and that impresses the Indians. He's going to be killed by gunmen, and he's supposed, and again, I haven't seen it,
right.
I'm reading the review talking about all the things that he did, and even, I guess, Harrison Ford's character is sort of a darker, sort of Han Solo on Cowboy, right? Is sort of, I guess, impressed and changed as a result of his interaction with the
first. Is Harrison Ford his sidekick in the movie?
Yeah, it's like a buddy comedy kind
of movie.
But,
yeah.
But it's kind of like the 48 Hours deal where they don't like each other at first, and then they start to like each other as the film progresses.
Jack, tell me a story. Fuck you. Oh, that's my favorite. Sunday Lovers, 1980. I have never seen that.
No, I've not seen that one either.
Stir Crazy.
Stir Crazy is fantastic. We talked about that already.
The Woman in Red, 4 years go by after Stir Crazy.
You skipped over, did you say Hanky Panky? Where he met Gilda Radner?
Oh, right. Shit, I didn't put that in there. So when did Hanky Panky come out?
82.
Yeah. All right, so 82.
That's where he met Gilda Radner and
fell in love.
Yeah.
Tragically, that was short-lived because she had cancer.
Yeah, I think
everybody fell in love with Gilda that knew Gilda.
Yeah.
Everybody.
But he had bad luck with women.
He had two wives before her.
And when he met Gilda Radner, he finally, fell in love with the right woman. They both fell in love. And she is great in The Woman in Red. In fact, I think she steals the movie, her character.
You don't think Kelly LeBlanc did?
Well, Kelly LeBlanc is hot as hell. And obviously the reason a lot of people who went to see that film went to see her. But Gilda Radner, to me, is the funniest because she's trying to sabotage everything. She doesn't have any lines. She's just, devious. She's kind of like, to a better degree, she's kind of like Carrie Fisher in The Blues Brothers.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say.
And sabotaging a bit. She had lines and acted crazy, and Blues Brothers is just a coke-fueled nightmare of a film, which is fantastic.
It's a beautiful film.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I don't know. Okay, we'll go with that.
Jeff?
Yeah, definitely. And, a lot of people talked about when he died, like, he's with Gilda now, and when Gene Wilder died, and which is kind of sad because he was married for a long time,
right?
After Gilda had passed,
like 30 years or something.
Oh yeah, he had married someone else.
18 years, with his most recent wife, the one he met on the set of See No Evil, Hear No Evil. She worked with people who were hearing impaired and helped teach them how to sight read, lip read, and so he brought her on as a consultant for the script. And as they were working on the movie, they both fell in love on that one. And he was married to her the longest, and she was with him to his death.
Right.
Yeah, I guess that would be kind of awkward. Well, now he's with Gilda, the woman he really loved, unlike you.
Right.
No, because, and I don't believe that. I you can have more than one love. And what he said after meeting his fourth wife and after coming basically to grips with the fact that you can love again, he said in one of his many quotes that said, I told myself it's time to stop living in the past and live again.
Right.
That's good advice. I need to start doing that. I'm not even kidding. Haunted Honeymoon came out in 86.
That's the last pairing of him and Gilda Radner.
Okay. Yeah. And who else is in that? John Candy? Or am I thinking of something? I think John Candy is in that, Haunted Honeymoon.
I don't know. If only we had a magic
box.
Dom DeLuise.
Yes,
that's right. Dom DeLuise is in that.
Dom DeLuise is.
Yeah, Jonathan Price is in that, a younger Jonathan Price.
Yeah.
I just remember seeing that and walking out going, that was just not good.
Yeah, it didn't do well, and it wasn't that interesting to me as far as a comedy movie.
Yeah, when I walked out, I remember just, it did not seem like a comedy.
Right.
It was almost like, if there was a message to this, I missed it. Nothing was funny, and it should have been funny.
Well, speaking of not being very funny, in 89 you got See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
That was not funny either.
No.
You didn't like it?
There were some funny parts.
I thought there were some very funny moments,
but it was not a funny movie.
Right. Altogether, it was not a funny movie, but again, there were funny parts. Like, the slapstick was good. Mm-hmm. And
well, the premise,
Joan Severance being naked in the shower was good.
Yeah. I think, yeah.
You guys don't have to comment. I just said stuff like that.
Yeah, I was just thinking, we'll have to worry about the wife listening. No, I won't. No,
you can blame it all on me, Tim. Tim's the
one.
You know,
that's right. This could be one of those things where, like, I need to go rewatch it. But my last recollection of See No Evil, Hear No Evil, I really enjoyed it. I love this. I've always loved the oddball pairing of these two guys.
Maybe you need to be an adult. Maybe you need to be grown up. You know,
that's right.
I was what? We were what? 19? 20?
When
you were 20, Jeff, and I was 19.
Yeah, but his performance is great, and he really takes it seriously.
Yes,
he doesn't like make it a stereotypical character.
Is he the deaf one or
the
blind one?
Yeah, he's the deaf one.
Okay. He's deaf, and Richard Pryor's blind.
Where's my grandma?
And the fact that they get involved in a murder, and they're trying to work it through together, and I love the premise. It's hysterical.
You know what? I will go watch it again, and.
All right, I'm going to do that too. Homework.
Just to give it another try.
I will give it another try.
I will tell you, I like all the pairings of Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder. I think they're all good. Even if the movie kind of falters, like I told you, I thought Stir Crazy kind of ended weird. I still love watching the pairing of those two.
Okay, I'll trust your judgment on this one. Jeff, did you like it?
Yeah. I'm
a hesitant.
I didn't love it, but... I've seen worse. Yeah.
Is it good enough for me to go watch again?
Yeah. The two of them together is worth watching no matter what.
Yeah, that's a
good
point.
Performance is fantastic.
When did, and this is something I don't know, maybe you, or we'll just leave it for someone to eventually send you a message via Facebook or wherever. When was the first buddy cop type movie with the oddball pairing buddy movie? Because when Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder got together in Silver Streak, I had never before... And I couldn't remember anything older than that where they paired up two so different kinds of
people. Are they cops in that movie?
They're not cops, but they're like that. It's the buddy. It's that same genre of the two people being paired
together.
Well,
even without looking it up, I would say Bing Crosby and Bob Hope on the road.
The road movies.
The road films. Yeah. And then, of course, Jerry Lewis and
I guess that.
Dean Martin. Which to me, you know, and this is a little digression for a second, but when I was younger... I always thought Dean Martin was the guy who led those films and was the one who brought Jerry along. But that's obviously not the case, that Jerry Lewis was the genius and used Dean Martin as the straight man. And when he was done with him, he said, I think I did this myself. But the buddy film, yeah, I would say that it's Dean, not Dean Martin. I would say
I have to think about that, yeah.
Well, and then even Abbott, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Laurel and Hardy,
yeah.
Yeah, I guess for some reason I'm thinking of it differently, of two guys that are doing, like, intentionally doing comedy versus... The comedy comes from two people who are not trying to be funny. They're not trying to entertain us.
Right.
What's funny is the pairing of two diametrically opposed either people or characters or the way they act or the way they treat each other. In this case, a black guy with a completely different style of humor than a white guy, and yet they work. Somehow it works together.
Or like a Midnight Run kind of pairing of the...
Midnight Run is one of my favorite movies.
That is a great movie.
You could have put that out in the 70s, and it could have been Richard Pryor, could have been Jack Waltz, and Gene Wilder could have been, the Duke.
Yeah, and, you know, that's a movie that we never see anymore. That's never on.
Every once in a while, I see that it's on, and I'll record it and watch it because I love that movie. It's just, it's one of my favorites of that era. And
you need to text me the next time it's on. I'm going to give you my number because I love that movie. And
Cigarettes are killers, Jack.
And it's one that never, it doesn't stand out from that time frame.
No.
As a great movie, but it is a great movie.
But it should, because it's well directed, well acted, great script. And, you know, it's De Niro's first comedy, right?
I think so, yeah.
And he nails it. You know, he plays this, you know, he plays great in it. And then that guy who always played cops from Chicago, I forget that actor's name. Yeah. He's dead now. He always played a cop from Chicago or a gangster from Chicago. So let's see. We got two more films before his career stopped. And,
His movie career stopped.
Yeah. Funny About Love in 1990. Never seen it. And Another You from 91, which is the last collaboration with Richard Pryor, which I have seen and don't enjoy very much.
It was, that one felt kind of worn out to me.
Well, also by that time, Pryor was emaciated and unable to move.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like Harlem Nights, which I looked forward to, but it was sad.
It was. That was very sad.
Funny About Love is good. It's worth seeing, though. It's Leonard Nimoy directed it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So then it's probably a good movie.
Yeah, it's a decent movie.
And then after 91, he went on to TV and, I guess, toured and, you know, all that stuff. But I don't...
Yeah, he became a little more disillusioned with the direction Hollywood was going. Even though he played in movies that had foul language, he felt, and he said this in one of his last interviews that he did live, that he would only do a movie if it felt like it was a worthy movie. But he said there's just swearing for the sake of swearing, not for the point of why you would swear. Like he said, if it made sense, then sure, swear. But... if you're just using it as punctuation, it didn't appeal to him.
The swearing in Blazing Saddles is a part of the film. It's intentional, and it's done not to shock, but just to be there and to be funny. And, you know, it's worth it. But, a lot of movies. Like, watch a Tarantino film.
And what he said as he got older anyway, he said he enjoyed the fact that now that he was with his fourth wife, he liked what he was doing writing. He said, I could get up, go write for a little bit, and if I wanted to stop, I could. Mm-hmm. I could walk in the other room, kiss my wife, get something to eat, maybe watch something, and then go back to write. And he felt like he had a little more control of his day and his schedule. So he really gave himself over to the craft of writing later in life and decided that was a better lifestyle.
Right.
Which is kind of cool to be able to have started your career on stage, moved to film, get to television, and end as an author.
Yep.
There's worse paths you could be on.
Yeah. I started out in radio and then worked in restaurants and then worked in radio and then worked in a restaurant and then worked at a barbershop and now I work in radio and a barbershop.
Well.
Mary Todd on Carroll Street in Cabbage Town. If you need a beard trim or a haircut, go to the website, marytoddhairco.com. Free plug. Hey, we've been speaking to Alan Sanders and Walt Murray. They are the co-hosts of a brand new podcast that is about to debut. Called The Wilder Ride. So make sure you go now and sign up. You don't have to sign up, but go.
You can subscribe.
You can subscribe. Yeah. That's what I meant to say. Subscribe. Please. Get it ready. And you could listen every day or you can build up like a week's worth and listen to them all at once. That's just something that I do. I like to binge podcasts like I like to do television.
Well, what's fun with this format, whether it's your show as a podcast or any of the other podcasts that are out there, is when you discover them. You can go back and listen to all of them as long as you're paying for the service that keeps them live. You don't delete them. Right. It's fun because, you know, you do stumble across these and they could be 4, 5, 6 years old. Doesn't matter. People find them and discover and binge. Yep. And I don't care as long as you're enjoying.
I like Dan Carlin's Hardcore History and his archives you have to pay for. So there were a couple of them I wanted to listen to and I paid for them. So if you really like something, you'll go buy it. You know, I didn't do the thing. Well, I wonder if I can find him on BitTorrent. Give the guy money. He works hard.
Well, I got to that point. Hopefully we all are in this room. I got to the point where, you know what? Somebody worked hard for this. And if they want $15-$20 and if I can't afford it, I've done something wrong in my path to get to where I am to this point in life.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I would say that is true. And if it's somebody that you really enjoy and like, you know, for a while their comedians were putting out their specials on their websites for $5-$10, Louis C.K., Todd Barry. I would pay for that. I would never, ever, you know, steal it. But let's say Disney puts out another Star Wars movie. I might have to stream it. I don't know.
You were not a fan of the most recent one?
No.
Nah, I was.
He liked it.
Yeah, I liked
you have
it.
To have his back sometime. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's good for the eyes. It's good for the eyes. I wouldn't call it cinema.
The other one was a rehash of Star Wars, which was a really cool movie.
Yeah, I like Rogue One. Cinematic. I loved Rogue
One's off the chain good.
Yeah, and I
love Rogue One.
But I think I'm done because of just the
why?
I just am.
Did they disappoint your expectations?
This last one did.
So you wrote a movie in your head you wanted and didn't get the movie
that was
you wanted.
That was the problem that everybody had with this last Star Wars. Everybody had, I want to see Luke being a Jedi. I want to see him get his lightsaber back, and I want to see him go.
Yeah, and they turned him into a jerk.
Kylo Ren, and everything that you were expecting to see got thrown over Luke's shoulder.
I love it.
Like the lightsaber.
The whole movie is summed up in Yoda's scene with him. It's all about failure, and this whole movie is about everybody had to realize you have to fail to the last possible element. Right. Everything about that, even the scene I hated the first time I saw it, the casino planet subplot.
Yeah.
I was like, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I went back and watched it the second time. I'm like, okay, yet another failure. Everything in that movie is a setup for a failure. Nothing works.
Right.
None of the plans work. None of the execution works. Everything falls apart to the end. All that's left of the rebellion fits on the Millennium Falcon. Right. You can't get much smaller than that at that
point. I still
point.
Don't understand why they need a rebellion. Like, the Empire was defeated. What did they do? Just get back together. They don't explain it.
See, that's the problem with Force Awakens. It didn't explain
it. And it doesn't explain, and this pisses me off. And who the hell is Snoke?
Well, who was Jabba?
Yeah, and then they just kill Snoke.
Jabba was a thug.
Yeah.
He was a gangster. You knew that. You didn't need his backstory.
But we only met him once, and we kill him halfway into the when we finally meet him.
Spoiler alert.
You didn't need his backstory. Snoke is a guy that's controlling... has the Force, and he's controlling, maybe a Sith, who we don't know if he's a Sith or not. So, you know, explain who he is.
Don't just put him up there.
Well, here's the thing. When Empire came out, if you remember when Empire came out.
Right.
82. It was panned.
80.
Oh, 80. Right.
No.
It was 80.
82 was Return of the Jedi.
83, I think it was 82, I'm thinking it was Raiders.
Right.
80. It was panned. It was like, wow, this is dark. It doesn't really make sense. They've taken a fairy tale and put it in a different place. And if you go read the reviews that came out within the first 6 months, it was still a hit.
Yeah.
But it was very like, oh, they really didn't capture that magic. It's not really. Then, with time and after Jedi, they're like, man, it's the best. And it's still, for me, it's the absolute best
of the
franchise. But it took some time, and it took the third movie to kind of set why two was where it was.
All right.
Well, so I will at least watch the ninth film. Now, they could screw this all up, and I may have egg on my face for liking eight, but right now, I was blown away.
Yeah,
I just like to bitch.
Well, I liked it. I mean, I had my problems with it, but I think I kind of have the attitude that the next one better be good.
Yeah.
Like they better have teed up the next one.
Right. If this was the setup for a really satisfying final chapter, then watching it all as a trilogy may feel
better. I am skipping Solo.
I am really worried about Solo.
Ron Howard, I'm going to give it the benefit.
Yeah, but don't forget,
he
was there to come help fix what two guys were screwing up. So
I don't think they had shot much, though, before they got fired, those two guys.
Donald Glover will probably be the best thing in that movie.
Right.
Yeah, from Atlanta, Stone Mountain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you watch Atlanta?
I don't, but I do know he's from Stone Mountain.
Pretty good show. All right.
Is it good?
It's dark, but it's good.
Well, before I know you want to close off, but the last thing on Last Jedi, just because you brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen it more than once?
No.
Did you only watch it once?
Only watched it once. I'm waiting for it to be on Netflix, and then I'll watch it.
Well, it's going
to
come out on Blu-ray here in a couple of weeks.
I think it's out.
You can rent it now on Comcast.
Digital download. I always wait for Blu-ray at this point. It's worth seeing another time, because as much as I enjoyed it the first time, I liked it even more. And people that I knew that were ambivalent or maybe on the borderline of not liking it liked it more
Time. Can I be honest about something? I watched The Force Awakens the second time, and I liked it better the second time. So... I like to say that I don't like things.
All right, so
you may have a tendency toward that.
Yes.
So,
what, Jeff?
As we're wrapping things up, point us to the Wilder Ride website, and you guys have a Patreon you're doing.
Yeah. Facebook, all that stuff.
Yeah, sure. The easiest place, obviously, is the website has all the links to everything else. It's thewilderride.com. Very easy to type out, The Wilder Ride. We do have a Facebook page. We've got a general Facebook page, The Wilder Ride, but we also have a listener group. So if you really want to get involved in the discussion, have some fun, share some things. And honestly, it's not just Gene Wilder. If you want to talk about movies or how they interrelate or how one movie made you fall in love with another movie, whatever, I don't care. We've got a listener group. We've got a Twitter page. We do have a Patreon page at... Walt?
Yeah, www.patreon.com, and we have several levels that you can get involved with, and we'll be rolling out some things.
Patreon.com/what?
Oh, The Wilder Ride. Patreon.com/The Wilder Ride.
Okay.
Yeah. Here, I tee you up a line. And
where is it? I can't find it.
Yeah, this is...
I'm at the main page. I don't want to start one. I want to... Yeah, it's actually everything's The Wilder Ride. Just do a search for that.
But, okay.
It's The Wilder Ride with kind of like the subtag, getting wilder by the minute.
That's good. What are your levels?
I would have to pull it back up, but I think 0 to 5 is sort of like, hey, thanks for having a cool show, or 0 to 4, 5 and up, it's we'll send you a sticker, like a, because each episode I sort of do a screen grab and kind of create like a little sticker. So we'll send you like that month's sticker. And then after that, it's a handwritten note on postcard, something like that. And then eventually, if you put up enough money, we'll maybe get you on as a guest.
We have sort of the same thing, although I said, yeah, I'll do a doodle for you. And it ends up, oh man, it's time consuming. Because I don't want them to suck. I can do a doodle for myself and it sucks, but so far they've liked
it. I actually
them.
Looked at your tiers and I started thinking about, since we don't really have, we've got one subscriber right now, sort of somebody who's like, I think this concept's so cool, I'm willing to plunk down $10 a month right now. Right. I was like, oh, okay. I was looking at yours. I was like, you know, you may have a smarter tier than what we've got, because I don't want to do a whole lot of work.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we're brand new. You know, you've got a name, you've got a rep, people know who you are. Mm-hmm. We're brand new. So that's why we wanted to really hit this one out of the block and hope that Young Frankenstein would be the flick that doesn't offend, that really brings in a love of Gene Wilder. It's a love of monster movies and parody. And I think hopefully, you know, this will launch us and get our followers going.
Well, sell it. Go ahead.
I'm going to add a tier tomorrow where if you give enough, you get to go to Thanksgiving dinner at Alan's house.
Oh, sweet. How much will that be? I'll donate.
$5.
Okay.
No, it's not going to be $5.
You're going to get a big turkey.
Nothing less than 10.
At least 10.
Everyone out there, check out the Wilder Ride podcast hosted by Alan Sanders and Walt Murray. Thank you guys very much for coming in and talking about it.
Thank you.
We'll be talking to you on your show soon.
Yeah.
And we look forward to that. And Jeff, just a little house cleaning. Jeff will not be on next week, but everybody will be back other than Jeff, and we'll do a regular format show. Last week, we talked to Kevin Smith. This week, Gene Wilder. And, yeah.
Do you have a staff pick you want to throw out there or anything?
Nah.
I wanted to promote the Ricky Gervais stand-up special on Netflix as my staff pick this week. Just because it's hilarious. And he's really, like, takes a piss out of everybody. Talks about, you know, when he hosted the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
And it's called Humanity, and he just kind of takes a piss out of humans and
good. I love Ricky Gervais, so I'll watch that.
Yeah, it's really funny.
What was the other thing I was going to say? Shit, I forgot. What was it going to be? Oh, you can also hear Alan on what radio? Plug your radio show.
Yeah. Sure. The funny thing is you can hear me almost 7 days a week. I'm on a station in Northwest Georgia, WBHF. That's AM 1450 and 100.3 FM. And during
streaming?
The week, yeah, it streams. Okay. We're on TuneIn Radio. And during the week, I'm sort of the Scott Slade. I host the morning news. I'm not part of the news, but I host it, keep it driving, interview guests. Saturday, though, we've got Waking Up with Alan from 7 to 10, followed by BK on the Air, where I kind of sit in as a third wheel. It's mm-hmm. BK's show. And we do that from 10 to noon. And then whenever WSB needs somebody to come up from the minors, you know, somebody, you know, threw out their arm or something, you know, they got to sit down. And so, like, hey, who can we get to come up and work on a Friday? Hey, we got this guy up in Cartersville. He'll drive all the way down to be in studio for 15 minutes of talk time during Atlanta traffic.
You're going to fill in for Eric Erickson.
Yeah.
You can find me on Facebook or Twitter. I'm a private investigator, like I said.
Don't worry about finding him. He'll find you. Yeah.
That's right. The company I'm with is Horizon Background Screening. We do private investigations work and pre-employment background checks.
You get to go out with the camera and take pictures of people having sex.
I do.
You do?
Yes.
Do you save them all?
Yeah. For
Tim wants to see.
Maybe I should start a Patreon for that.
Well, this is a pretty regulated field by the state, so you've got to keep those. It's almost like the IRS. You've got to keep all that for so many years.
I forgot that that's what you do for a living during the show, and now that you've brought it up, I want to do another half hour about it, but we don't have time.
Well, if you ever have a slow week,
in the future, no, you will be on again, and we will discuss what a private investigator does.
Yeah, once the Wilder Ride gets huge, though, they won't have time for us.
No. They'll get picked up by How Stuff Works, and they're going to screw those guys.
Yeah. All right, Stuff Works, Gene Wilder.
Yes.
Right.
All right, guys.
Hey, Tim, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you as well. Thanks, you guys have been fantastic staying in touch and keeping us on track of what to bring and be ready for this show, and I thank you.
And best of luck to the Wilder Ride. Everybody go check it out. Make sure that you...
26th, right?
Yeah. March 26th.
Sure.
Yep.
Looking forward to it.
You're so anxious, Jeff. I'm worried now that we're not going to meet your expectations. We're going to have the Last Jedi effect on you. You're like, that's not how I would do that show. I'm
this
not going to listen to another
I'm
one.
Really looking forward to it.
You need to go back and listen again.
This whole minute-by-minute concept is really exciting to me, so I want to check it out, but I don't want to check out any of these other ones that influenced your decision to go with that minute-by-minute format.
Well,
I want the Gene Wilder one to be my first.
Oh, good.
Minute by minute experience.
My encouraging words would be stick through at least the first week, because in older movies, the first 4 or 5 minutes is credits.
Yeah. Right.
So to try to be engaging in a about credits
that was
is a little
really
interesting.
Good Chiron.
But I think we put in some pretty cool trivia and stuff, but we bring our guest in starting week two, because we knew bringing a guest in to talk about credits didn't make sense. But every week thereafter, we will have somebody joining us to chat about Young Frankenstein.
All right, everybody, stick around. Autumn's recap of this week's Walking Dead episode is coming up when we say goodbye, so stick around for that, listen to that, and goodbye. Oh, we say at the end of the show, keep it canon, so I'll say 3, 2, 1. Are you ready? 3, 2, 1.
Keep it canon. That wasn't running really. You want to try it again?
No, I'm going to leave that there.
Good day, sir!
Well, well, well. Looks like we got another Walking Dead recap. I am Negan. Okay, here we are. We see the Negan's people. What are they called? The saviors. They're standing on an overpass looking for people. They're told that the priest is gone, and so they all drive away. And Daryl et al., including gay lady, lesbian lady, her name is Tara, and Rosita, and Tom Petty. I don't know what his name is. He's got the burned face, and his name's Tom Petty. So that they can sneak in the woods underneath them and not be noticed. And then we switch to Gabriel and that doctor who helped him escape. Yeah, the doctor and Gabriel are trying to read a map in the car. Gabriel says, quote, God is always leading the way. And he's sitting with the, they're both sitting with the windows open, which was concerning. Then we have the opening credits. Gabriel looks way worse than what he's acting like. I never thought that a black man could look so green. They did a great job making him look really sick. So they're walking along. They find a little hidden house with some sort of banging something on like a tall tower. I thought it might be a generator or something. Turns out to be something different. Scene change to Daryl and Rosita and Tara. They want to... Oh, Tara is all pissed off at Tom Petty because he killed her girlfriend over at the sanctuary. That's it. All we see. We just needed to know that Tara was pissed. All right, we're back at the hilltop. Morgan is sitting with that kid who's staring at those prisoners. He wants to know who killed his brother. Carol's worried about the kid. She's also worried about Morgan, I'm sure, because he's losing it. And Maggie's over in the distance watching. All right, now we're back with Negan. He's talking to Eugene. Negan is suspecting that the doctor's a traitor, but he's scaring Eugene. He's really trying to like push Eugene to make sure that he didn't have anything to do with it. Because, you know, I think we are kind of a reflection of Negan in a way, because we also doubt that Eugene is 100% a savior. Even though he's doing a lot of things to make sure that Negan understands his loyalty, I still think maybe hope that Eugene is not totally bought into the saviors. So Negan puts him in charge of an outpost, says he's going to start to make bullets, and he lets him know that these bullets will be used to kill Rick's people. So I guess he's like testing Eugene. Eugene makes sure that there will be wine at the outpost because he can't handle his life. All right, now we're back with Gabe in that house. He's going through some papers. He finds out that the place is filled with like old radio equipment. And this reminds me, didn't Rick hear some talk on a radio once and he could never respond for some reason? I feel like in the early season there was something like that. I know that there was some a little bit of communication between he and Morgan, so I don't know if I'm confusing that. But anyway, they find the guy that used to live there. He killed himself. All right, now we're back with Daryl and Rosita and Tom Petty. Negan's people won't go through the swamp, so Tom Petty knows that, and so he's telling them that that's the way that they should go. People are all doubting it. Stupid Tara, get out of here. All right, now we're back with Maggie. She's looking at that baby that they found. I forget what her name was. What was her name? Chelsea or something. Anyway, she's looking at that baby. She's actually touching her belly, which is like the first sort of time that we're actually seeing her react to actually being pregnant. All right, now we're back at the doctor and Gabriel. They find, oh, what's this? They happen to find 2 bottles of antibiotics? What crazy luck! All right, now we're back with Daryl. He's talking to Tom Petty. The swamp is full of zombies, so they have to clear a path. All right, now we're... Man, they switch quick. All right, now we're back at the hilltop. We've got the old mayor with Maggie there, and that nice prisoner guy, and they're trying to get out. They're trying to let them give the prisoners some time outside of the thing, like, to get
some exercise, he said, and some shade. She says no, and she's cutting their rations. Blah. Right now, we're back at the swamp. They're clearing the path. Tara and Tom Petty stay behind while some other no-names and Rosita and Daryl go and clear the path. So Tara, as everyone's just like chilling, all the other people, Tara sees some zombies walking in the background, and so she makes Tom Petty volunteer to go kill them. Which is real smart. Leave the group you're trying to protect, including Judith in that group, and go kill some zombies that wouldn't even bother you if they just stayed quiet. So stupid. All right. Switch to the doctor and Gabriel. They're talking about whatever. Gabriel just knocks over this real big piggy bank, and oh, wow, there's some car keys and a map and like everything that they would ever need. And here's antibiotics. Here's a car key and a map. Here's new shoes and an outfit. Like, what this? What is this? I feel like this is a video game where you find a cabin full of treasures that you really needed. Here's a health potion and here's a extra life. All right, Tara and Tom Petty are killing these zombies. Tom Petty says that he's really sorry for killing Tara's girlfriend, and Tara still wants to kill him. So he's kind of half behind a tree, and she's like, I'm going to kill you no matter what. And so she, bam, she shoots him, but it misses and it hits the tree. He's running. He's still injured. I forgot what his injury was from, but he's injured on his arm. So he stops because he's bleeding, and she's staring at him, pointing the gun at his head, which, you know, if this was real life, he'd have been like, she's, you know, she would have said, like, gotcha, and then shot him. But instead, she just stands there, and whoopsie, the saviors are coming. So she's still holding the gun to him. They're hiding behind some bushes, and then and we'll see what happens there. All right, now we're back to Doctor and Gabriel. They're going to find the car, and he hears the clanging that we heard when they first found the car, the house. And oh, he's going blind this whole time. I forgot. Whatever, he's going blind. So he looks up and he finds out that the sign says danger, and I don't know what it said, but it said danger, and he freaks out. He's like, oh, look out. And so the doctor gets bear trapped, and then the walkers hear that, I guess, and so they start coming for him, and some of the walkers are stopped by the bear traps, but then there's one that's like nar, 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 nomming, trying to get him. So even though Gabriel's kind of going blind, he gets a gun and he shoots the zombie, you know, magic. This cabin is a magical place, it turns out, where blind people can read signs and shoot accurately. Okay. Now we're back with Tara and Tom Petty. Negan's people, you can hear them talking about, like, well, I guess we'll check out the swamp. And so then, to prove his loyalty, Tom Petty jumps out. He's like, oh, hey, I made it. I've been sleeping in the woods and being attacked by zombies, but I made it. Let's not go to the swamp, because I just came from there and there's nobody there. So you know what? I bet you they're going to go this way. We can get a better blah, blah, blah. So he like shows Tara that he is still loyal with them and not Negan's people. Oh, and also Rosita turns out to be there, and she's like, I saw the whole thing. And then they find their people again, and Daryl's pissed and he's scaring Judith. But Daryl's right. Tara, what are you doing? All right, now we're back with Doctor and Gabriel. They're getting in the car, and they're like, yes, we made it. And then they hear gun cocks, and it's the saviors. They found them. I guess they heard the gunshots is what they said. They put them in the truck bed, and the doctor is saying, like, this isn't, like, why do you believe in God? This is dumb. And Gabriel tells him, like, this is still God leading us. And then the doctor sees the gun in the open sort of gun in the savior guy's holster. He's like, hey, I think you're right. And he tries to grab the gun, but then he misses or he messes up. And then the guys shoot the doctor. And they even tell him, like, hey, you idiot, that's the doctor. And then poor Gabriel, he's so, so sad. And they drive away. Now we're back to everyone and company. They make it to the hilltop. Daryl is explaining to Enid and Maggie and Carol about what happened to Coral. And, so the little kid's asking about, you know, how Coral died, and they're talking. Okay. And then we see Maggie walking up, and you guys, could we just make Maggie a little more pregnant? I mean, maybe I'm confused about how much time has passed, but she should be way more pregnant. Indian doctor. Oh, he's not a doctor. He's a pharmacist, which I don't know if you're a doctor, if you're a pharmacist, but the Indian guy's there. He's not Indian. He's Pakistani. I don't know. What's his name? Ameed or something. This is sounding pretty racist. Anyway, he's there. He's like, hey, I know about medicine. I can help out. And so she's like, cool. All right, now we're back with Eugene. He's making bullets. Here comes sexy Ginger trying to flirt with him. And instead he's just like, I'll order dinner and I want some eggs, dancing with some onions, blah, 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 blah. Somebody wants peppers. Who knows? Anyway, he's talking, is taking control over his little outpost, and bam, in walks Negan. Oh, and he has Gabriel. Negan doesn't like the output that Eugene is making and suggests, Eugene is amazing and suggests these like medieval sort of tactics, like flinging guts at them with catapults, and Negan loves it. Then he makes Gabriel sit there and like sort through bullet casings and things, and poor Gabriel, he's in a real crisis. And so he's trying to talk to, once Negan goes away, Gabriel tries to talk to Eugene about sort of what's going on a little bit, and Eugene's not having it. And again, I really still feel like Eugene is in it with us. So fingers crossed. All right, we're back with Maggie. She's letting the prisoners out for a spell. I'm going to let y'all out for a spell. And then, oh, here comes Rick. But then we have a stupid scene change. And here's Negan. He's got a bunch of the saviors sort of watching him with Lucille and some chained up zombies. And he's like screwing his Lucille bat into zombie guts and explaining that a little bit of this zombie gets on them and maybe it would turn them. I guess that's what he's saying. But when they all spread it all over themselves to sort of camouflage their like human scent with zombies walking around, what if they had a cut then? Wouldn't they have turned then? So I don't know. Is it like AIDS? Is this whole thing just an analogy for AIDS? I guess we'll have to wait and find out. Thanks for listening to Autumn's Walking Dead Recap. See you next week, radios.
Two Faces Radio.